Hey everybody, it's Dr. G. Thank you for tuning in to Spirit, Tales, and Magic, where we always say there is indeed a world unseen. A world that exists around us all the time. And every now and then, for whatever reason, we catch a glimpse of it and the dead get in. We're closing out 22 and storming into 23. And just one little mention. Oh, 22, I forgot you were there. You may go now. But that's not how we're going to do it. We're doing it like this. We are going to count down the top 10 paranormal incidents witnessed by police. And also the top 10 paranormal incidents that are tied to some sort of disaster. So when we talk about paranormal events, many do tie them with something catastrophic. An example would be the sightings of the Mothman right before the collapse of the Silver Bridge. Now we're going to cover my friend the Mothman in much greater detail in another episode. But you get the idea. And there would always be, it seems, some doubter. And our attorneys are waiting for me to say Doubting Thomas or Debbie Downer. Whoops. Anyway. Those folks that would remind us that the character of these people who allegedly saw this paranormal event, well, how could you possibly believe them? It's very similar to an attorney in court trying to discredit a witness. Because after all, if you can discredit the witness, then fewer people will believe whatever story they had. I remember a shining example of that decades ago on New Year's Eve in Detroit, Michigan. I was free that New Year's Eve, something that almost never happened. So I decided to take a New Year's Eve train ride. A New Year's Eve mystery theater and murder theater train ride. A New Year's Eve murder mystery theater train ride on what was purportedly an incredibly haunted set of railroad tracks. Now that was something that was right up my alley. So I remember mentioning several months before that, I heard a discussion about this theater. And I mentioned to the folks I was working for at the time that, wow, that would be a great thing to experience. Now the guy I was working for at the time says, it's a very difficult ticket to get. People wait 1 to 2 years to get on that ride. That's wow. I'll have to get on that list because I would certainly like to experience it. And just like magic, he made it so. So here I am with the date he provided, with literally 20 to 25 of Detroit's super elite at the time, some of whom I had seen either at a show or in executive protection capacity. They were the who's who of the city at the time, and some were well-known celebrities. Most everybody was accompanied by a protection staff, and the train itself, plenty of armed security. So everyone felt very safe and secure. Now, I would be lying if I said that I was completely at ease at the time. I am not intimidated by stardom. I've met a lot of celebrities, or socioeconomic status. Cassandra and I always say that your socioeconomic status and $7 will get you a small cup of coffee at Starbucks, same as mine. My date for the evening was the daughter of what some people would call, well, the godfather of Detroit. But she was into magic and loved ghost stories. and her father trusted me. I was at the time in his employ, after all. So that's what got us on the train. Her father also had a strong interest in the ownership of the train and many of its stops. The entertainment on the train would vary from season to season and time of the year. Was it New Year's, Halloween, Christmas, etc., etc.? The New Year's Eve murder mystery was their top event, sold out for 1 to 2 years, sometimes even longer in advance. In this ride, you're eating a wonderful dinner while being told a story of a murder and of the suspects. Now, this train's going to go in a straight line for about 5 or 6 miles from your boarding point. Now, there's different directions when you're talking about a train or a ship, or I always refer to the boarding point as the dock side or the port side of the train. If you were facing that, then what would behind you would be the starboard side. Of course, there's the front of the train, there's the back of the train. The last half a mile of the tracks, you go through a light illusion and sound illusion that they made that the train drives under, which can make you believe it's going either much faster or much slower than it actually is. You stop for dessert and the solving of the mystery. Then you go to an assigned window seat on the port side of the train, where you will witness a replica of the famous ball in New York City, and it's going to slide down and drop just like theirs does. There's a countdown, the popping of champagne, and the toast. You have officially welcomed in the new year. Then you're going to take a slow ride backwards to original docking station, where you will disembark the train. This event is so well done and very choreographed, and you don't even know that you're actually going backwards. I was amazed. And coming from a 5.5-decade stretch of making my living through deception of one kind or another, for me to be impressed at that, it's no small feat. There was a small section of track that you passed on the way that was close to a homeless encampment. Now, that little section of track, a little, I'm saying like maybe 3 or 4 football fields long, it had a second track. It was not used anymore. And when you were passing, no one would notice that area, because you were facing your window seat. That station would have occurred on the port side, or on, I'm sorry, on the starboard side, if you will, the side that's away from where you boarded. So everyone else is sitting with their back to it, with your face in the window. The shades on those windows have been drawn because they don't want anything to distract you from what you paid to see. Sounds logical, I guess. Now, that particular station was in what they referred to as an old ghost town. It was forgotten by time and vandalized by what they describe as every vagrant and gang-related thug with a can of spray paint. But they left it as it was. There were some people that camped there and began to call that home. And they didn't cause any problems, so the railroad elected to leave it alone. Dinner was fantastic. My date and I had solved the murder mystery correctly at the reveal. We were happy about that. And we were headed back to our destination point when the train slammed on its emergency brakes. Now, we were not going fast enough to create the everybody fall all over each other like they do in the movies when the train slams on its brakes. But to say that we were knocked off balance a bit would not be an understatement. This is followed by every celebrity's protection agent, as well as the security on the train, going into full alert status and going berserk. Guns everywhere and instructions to close the blinds in front of you. Stay down in your area until we can establish what the incident is and how to dispense with it. You're in no danger. Sounded like the robot from Lost in Space. Danger, Will Robinson. But anyway, not to discredit any of those guys. I was one of those guys for a very long time. They have a job to do and they're very serious about it. The next hour is just chaos. And I'm going to skip most of the details on what went on for several reasons. But in the end, as we're all disembarking, I'm asked to stay behind. And of course, my date's going to stay behind with me with about 20 new friends that are bodyguards from Daddy. Now, I'm one of three people who are going to be interviewing about four or five homeless folks. By now, we have DPD, that's the Detroit Police Department. We have the Sheriff's Department. We have representatives from the FBI and from the railroad. It is amazing how fast people scramble to a high-profile incident. We had SWAT and other agencies on the ground and in your face. The claim was that another train, an old train, was going to intersect with us, and all the folks that were in the encampment tried to make it stop, but they couldn't. And they were afraid of a crash, and not only would it kill the people on the trains, it would ruin their living space. So around four of them ran onto the tracks, joining hands and waving the two people's hands on the end and the hands in the middle, hoping the engineer would see them, which he did. And he slammed on the emergency stop, bringing the train to a stop just prior to the switch that would have put the other train on our tracks and about 50 yards from the human barricade that he saw. Now, a lengthy investigation was going to follow. Everyone in the encampment saw the same thing. Everyone was separated. There was no shortage of interviewers. Describe to me in your own words what you saw. When did you see it? Everybody saw the same thing. Some people not only saw it, they smelled it, and they thought they heard people on it even screaming. Now, on our train, some of the people thought they may have heard something, but they thought it was part of the show. And of course, nobody saw it. Why? Because they were all on the port side, looking the other way. The blinds behind them, even if they had turned around, were closed. So turning around gets you nothing but a dark window. Everything was closed down. All of your attention was purposely directed to the side of the train that the event was going to take place on. Nobody was seriously injured, and the investigation was termed inconclusive. Why, you ask? Well, there were no credible witnesses to any such event. After all, if something like that would have truly happened, someone of record on the train would have surely seen it. Now, we're not even going to speak of how that was wrong on so many levels, but in my decades in this business, this sort of thing happens all the time. This is probably the wrong terminology, but it is funny, don't you think, how we deal with things we don't understand. Some people fear them. Others damn them. And still others try to discredit them or the people who see them or talk about them. After all, if you can discredit the person telling the story, then how authentic could the story actually be? And you'll hear me say this a lot. I find it very interesting that way back in the day, the Fox sisters, who are credited with starting the spiritualist movement, recanted. They told everyone that they made it up, that it was a practical joke that they started on their mom. But that didn't end it. It just made it go stronger. But the folks who would discredit us or damn us or just flat out not believe us, although they are in growing number, I can tell you, my friends, after all the time I've spent in this business, there are things out there that you positively can't explain. So we're going to talk about now number 10 on paranormal events that are witnessed by the police. They are passed down as folklore or urban legends, stories told around the campfire or perhaps in a meeting room or at family dinners, passed from generation to generation of police families. Police officers sometimes have a tough time of things. Think about that for a minute. And it doesn't matter what camp you're in or how you feel about police officers, but they witness gruesome crime scenes. They have to deal with delivering incredibly bad news. Oftentimes, they're meeting people on the worst day of their life. They're not given proper credit and are generally disrespected for their service, many of which are disrespected by people who, frankly, don't have the dedication or the moxie it takes to even do that job. The service to the public is a hard place to be. But then I digress. Police officers responding to emergencies sometimes come across something totally different from anything that they've seen, something that's not normal. And sometime they don't even have to leave the station to do it. We call number 10 the surveillance camera incident. This involves Officer Carl Romeo. A quiet night on duty in New Mexico in 2014. He was keeping an eye on several surveillance cameras recently installed around the station. At the time, the cameras and entrance systems were considered to be state-of-the-art, something completely new for them and something well appreciated by all of the officers. Things were going very well until he noticed something strange at the entry gate. He was watching the camera directly above the door, scrutinizing the visuals. He initially thought that he was seeing a white blob. He thought it could be an insect because insects crawling on a camera look huge. That's something we deal with every day here in the Pacific Northwest. We have, 47 camera angles on this property. And when a spider walks across one of those lenses, it's something to see on a big screen TV. Or maybe it was some type of artifact. All that went right out the window when he saw legs below it. He said he didn't know exactly what to do, but he was looking at what he could only describe to his supervisor the next morning as a ghostly image. The entryway was blocked off with a gate. It was secured with an alarm and an electronic deadbolt that was unpickable. There was no way that any human could wander in by accident, or any aggressor that looked threatening could make it through that door. It was a 7-digit combination from the outside to let you in, which could be turned off by the operator watching the camera, and then the only way in was for him to buzz you in. If you attempted to breach the security and ram the door, a solid steel door would drop down from the ceiling, completely sealing off the entrance to everyone. So there's no way anybody's sneaking in. At first, he said he felt a little queasy having to explain it all in the morning to his supervisors. He didn't know how they would take it. But he was astounded when most of them not only believed him, but they began to add their own stories of creepy events in the building. Noises, sometimes hearing people talking and searching the building, but no one was there. Smells or things that you see out the corner of your eye. It seems that several officers had their own paranormal events in the station, and as it turns out, that was one of the reasons for adding the high security. It was a gang of events that no one could justify or explain. This officer, now in his retirement, speaks frequently about those days and says that he often wonders why no official investigation was ever mounted. That's our number 10 story involving paranormal witnessed by the police. Tomorrow, my friends, we will tell you number 9. Enjoy the new year, be safe, and until we see you in person at an event, we thank you for listening to the podcast, and we'll see you inside your mind.